I think I've probably told you the story before about the man who was walking across a bridge and saw a stranger coming across the bridge from the other direction with a rope wrapped and wrapped and wrapped around his waist. And when they met at the center of the bridge, the stranger handed our first person the end of the rope and said, "Here, hold this," and proceeded to launch himself over the side of the bridge. In which case, our friend, who was wandering across the bridge unwittingly, now finds himself standing there holding the end of a rope with this stranger dangling from the other end over the side of the bridge. And all efforts and attempts to get the person dangling at the bottom to climb back up the rope are to no avail. Kind of a frustrating experience to find yourself in, having not asked for it, to suddenly be burdened with this other person's issue, whatever it was, while they dangle over the side of the bridge, unwilling to help themselves. Well, the question, of course, in that case is, what do you do? How long do you stand there? You know, when the other person dangling over the side says, "Oh no, you can't let go. My life is at stake. My reputation is at stake. You must stand there and hold the rope." How long do you stand there and hold the rope? Well, we'll come back to that. Of course, you recall where we have been considering the words of Paul in Ephesians chapter 4. He has a list of things to put off and to put on that we've been talking about. The good news is that unless you're convicted by these things, he's not talking to you. Maybe that's not good news. But you follow what I'm saying? And the exciting thing for me as the preacher is that you can't get mad at me, because if the words offend you and prick you to the heart, that means you can understand them, and they're meant for you. And it's not me in the way. It's the words of Paul and the words of God to you, connecting with your heart. The good news is, if you get it, that means God thinks you can handle it. Because God does not waste his time telling dead people what to do. Isn't that nice? Because you can't tell dead people to behave better. They're not going to behave better. But if you're already alive in Christ, then God says, "Ah, how exciting, a wonderful opportunity. I can instruct you how to really live now." So anytime we find lists of things to do and not do in the Bible, it's always a reminder that God's grace has come to us first and raised us up to new life. And that's the only reason God would bother telling us what to do. Last time we talked about two kinds of unwholesome talk. Profanity, which is taking perfectly good words and treating them like common everyday words. Not perfectly good words, but special sacred words, and treating them like common everyday words. And we talked about, I'm not sure exactly what the proper term is, cussing, swearing, bad words. Words that have a negative connotation, but which we are, our language, our culture has reserved for their shock value, and which carry, even though there's a perfectly good word to say everything that you could say with bad words, using the bad words also carries the connotation, "Ooh, I'm a bad person, I'm tough, I'm mean, I'm, and look what I can say." And we talked, or listened to Paul describe just briefly, how those are not really the appropriate articles of clothing, if you think of it in those terms, for Christians to put on. Rather, we put on wholesome talk, talk that builds up, talk that does not drag the name of our God in the dirt, nor cause people to question our own character and our own reputation by the way we speak. But I think I asked this question at the end of last time, and if I didn't, I'm going to ask it again. How possible is it to completely avoid profanity and bad words but still have unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. All right, it's very possible. And what would that mean when you say that it's very possible? What kinds of unwholesome talk don't involve profanity or bad words? All right, gossip, one of the prime ones. Now, gossip is using perfectly legitimate words, right? Potentially, I mean, you could throw profanity or other things in, but using perfectly legitimate words to tear someone down. But gossip is specifically when you use those perfectly legitimate words to tear someone down when they are not present. Right? What do we call it when you use words to tear someone down and they are present? Okay, criticism. Or some might use the term verbal abuse. Right? Today we're going to talk specifically about gossip. Hopefully next time we'll get to verbal abuse. I want to spend a little bit of time looking at that, but I realized we're going to run out of time today if we try to do both in one day. So, gossip. Using demeaning or sending demeaning messages about someone behind their back when they're not present. We've spent some time talking about this before. Remember when we had a sermon on Matthew 18 and we did a whole kind of diagram of A, B, and C, and A comes to C instead of talking to B, then that's gossip, right? That's using, you know, telling C your negative story about B when B is not around is a unwholesome talk behavior. And Matthew 18 specifically says, if you got something that's difficult to talk about with someone, if you've run into an issue where you need to give some constructive criticism, the only legitimate person for you to talk to about that initially is the person with whom you have the issue. Paul reiterates that here when he says, in your anger, do not sin, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry. Speak truthfully to your neighbor, be honest with each other. All that, he's simply saying, if you have something negative to say, you need to say it directly to the person that you have the issue with and not to somebody else. To say it to someone else is unwholesome talk. So, how do I know if what I'm saying or what I'm hearing is gossip? You know, this is one of the most confusing things. Every time Karina and I talk about it, she always reminds me, but it happens so fast, you know, that people blah, 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 blah. And by the time I realize, whoa, wait a minute, this is really making me uncomfortable. I didn't want to be part of this conversation. They've already got it out. Like the person on the bridge, right? I was walking along, minding my own business, and the next thing I know, somebody's handed me a rope and jumped over the side. Whoa, wait a minute. I'm holding on to something I didn't want to be holding on. I didn't ask for this. Why did you tell me this? Suddenly I'm burdened with this information that I did not want to know or need to know and really wasn't my business to know. So how do I know whether it's gossip or not? Well, two things. One of them I just talked about. I'll come back to that in a second. The first thing is, would I be embarrassed if the other party walked in on me while I was saying this? Right? So I'm having a conversation with Dale about Bev. There are all kinds of topics of conversation I could have with Dale about Bev that would be perfectly acceptable. And if Bev walked in, we'd say, yeah, we were just commenting about how wonderful your lasagna is. Right? Perfectly fine. Yeah. But there are potentially all kinds of conversation topics that I could be having with Dale about Bev that if she were to walk in on us, I would go, oops. Ever been there? If I wouldn't say or listen to, right, on either side, this conversation in the presence of the person that we're talking about, that's a bad sign. Right? There may be exceptions, mind you. There may be exceptions, but it's a bad sign. It's a clue that, maybe this is not wholesome talk that's going on here. Now, you'll tell me, but I really need help from someone to figure out how to deal with this situation, right? So-and-so at my job is driving me crazy, and I don't know how to fix it, and I'm afraid if I say something, I'll offend him. So I really need help from somebody. And sure, as I'm talking it over with my boss or with one of the other employees, if they walked in, yeah, I would keep my mouth shut. I'd be embarrassed and offended. but isn't it appropriate for me to go and get help? No, I don't want to offend them. I need some guidance here to figure this out. Well, here's our second principle. If it burdens the listener with information that they would rather not know, or that will color their relationship negatively, that will affect their trust with the other person negatively, that's a bad sign. It's a bad sign. So if you really desperately need help to figure out what to do about a situation, and you don't want to gossip, the best you can do is get help from a disinterested third party who doesn't even know the person. Because all too often what happens in the name of getting help is we hand somebody a rope and jump off the side. And then they're bearing the weight of the burden of knowing this horrible information. And we go, I can just hang out here forever. I don't have to deal with it. I feel much better because I unburdened my soul. But all I've done is burden somebody else with it. So if you really desperately need help, and you're not just venting to someone else, talk to somebody who doesn't know the person. And I would guess that each of you, if you thought about it, know somebody who's wise, who's intelligent, who could give you good counsel, who doesn't even live in this county. You follow what I'm saying? Who is far from this place if the person were to be near. Or somebody who's not connected with your family, if it's a family man, doesn't know any of the members of your family. Somebody that you could get some counsel from, but you're not going to be burdening them with information that's going to color their relationship with the other person because they don't even know them. And they probably never will know them. And they're not going to have contact with them. And you're not destroying their trust with that other person by sharing information with them, which will cast the other person in a negative light. By the way, if you do ask for help from someone, right? Say, I don't know how to figure this out. Will you talk me through it? In my humble opinion, you are also asking for accountability. Or else you're just venting. Because if you ask for help from someone and tell them the whole story and then go back and do nothing about the problem, did you really want help? No. You just wanted to get it off your chest so you could feel better and not have to deal with it. So really, that person that you asked for help from ought to have the right and really the responsibility to check in with you and say, so how'd it go? Otherwise, bad sign, right? It may be gossip. So, two principles. If I wouldn't say it in front of the other person, it's a bad sign. If I'm burdening the other person with information that will cast the person in question in a negative light, if I've handed someone on a rope and jumped off a bridge, that's a bad sign. By the way, why do people gossip? We talked about some reasons before when we looked at Matthew 18. But here are just a few reasons. Right? One of the main reasons why people gossip is because when you share a secret with someone else, you feel closer to them. Isn't that right? It's a way of bonding with someone else to share with them the latest dirt. Is that accurate or not accurate?
I never do it.
I mean, how does that sound to you? Do you think that's actually true, that people will gossip with each other in order to feel like they have something in common? Feel bonded together, right? Sometimes it's to impress other people with what I know. Oh, did you hear the latest about? And we actually get some good feelings about ourselves when other people say, wow, cool. How exciting to find that out. We look for acceptance and approval from other people by sharing things that they didn't know. Often it's just to vent frustration and anger. Okay, and we talked just briefly a little bit about that. And even worse, well, maybe even worse, we do it to convince ourselves that we are right. You know how I figured that one out? I don't have any trouble avoiding the temptation to gossip about people with whom I have a trusting relationship. Let me say that again. I'm not even tempted to gossip about people that I have a positive, trusting relationship with. Do you understand what I mean by that? I'm not tempted to gossip about Karina because I know if I have any issues with her, she and I will work them out and can work them out, and there's no temptation to gossip about her. The only time I'm tempted to gossip about someone is when I don't really trust that person. And what they've done, I don't understand. And I think that I'm right, you know, that they're off their rocker, but I'm not sure that I'm right, that they're off their rocker. Maybe it's me. So I go and tell it to somebody else to try to convince myself that what they did is completely unreasonable. And what I did was perfectly reasonable. But people with whom I have a positive and strong, trusting relationship with, there's no temptation to gossip, because if any problems come up, we'll just go and fix it ourselves. We don't need to drag in other people into the picture. Gossip serves, in this case, to reinforce in my own mind my assumptions about the other person's bad motives. That's a dangerous thing to do, right? But they're always assumptions. It serves to help me feel better, to help me feel better about writing them off or mistreating them. Because now I have several other people who agree with me that their behavior has been totally illegitimate. Well, how valid are these reasons for tearing somebody else down behind their back? Come on. How valid are they?
Not.
Thank you. Not valid. You know, there are some problems with gossip. You and I share some juicy gossip together, right? And we feel close because we know secrets now that other people don't know. And we feel like we're on the inside. But you know, there are some unspoken things that I learn when I share gossip with someone and they listen to it. Now, say I share something juicy with Ken. We feel closer for a little while because we've shared the secret. But Ken has learned something about me which actually makes us feel farther apart. What has he learned about me when I share gossip with him? Yes, precisely. You are not to be trusted. And when I'm not around, Ken thinks, all right, when I'm not around, he's going to be sharing things about me with other people. So I'm certainly not going to let him know anything that I wouldn't want anyone else to know. Now, likewise, what do I learn about Ken when he listens to it? Pretty much the same thing. Oh, when I'm not around, Ken is going to listen to other people telling trash about me. And he won't defend me in my absence from those attacks. Well, he's not to be trusted. So in the process of doing something that we're trying to feel closer together, that, you know, that we're doing to try to feel closer together, we actually build up a wall between us, because both of us, though we may learn some interesting news, we also learn some character issues about each other that are not so pleasant. So, what conclusion can we draw about gossip? Avoid it like arsenic. It's poison. It not only hurts the person that you're talking about, but it damages your relationship with the person you're talking to, and it damages their trust of you. There's no safe way to handle it.
So, question.
Yes.
You love someone. They share some troubles in their life. You talk to another person that loves them. Do you share the troubles that they're having or not?
Do you have permission?
Or do you say, after the conversation, you say, can I share this, or...
If they're honestly wanting some help from you and you're saying, I don't know how to help, can I talk to somebody else?
Okay.
If you have permission, if it's clear that they don't want you to tell someone else and talk to someone else, then, you know, they've shared things with you in that confidence. And you need to respect that. Yeah, for sure. It's possible that you could speak about the situation anonymously with somebody else who doesn't even know them and get some useful counsel and advice without revealing anything about who anybody is, and, you know, because the other person doesn't even know them and you've not named any names. But it's quite a different thing to share it with somebody else who loves them and knows them, because you may just be handing them a rope. And now they're burdened with that. By the way, you remember last time I mentioned about profanity, that I didn't realize it, but it is logical when you think about it, that use of profanity is one of the things that our church manual says a person can be disciplined or disfellowshipped for. And, you know, like I said, it didn't really occur to me how serious that was until somebody pointed it out to me. But it is one of the Ten Commandments, right? And so it's not shocking or anything that that's the case. But if you can be disciplined or disfellowshipped for profanity, why can't you be disciplined or disfellowshipped for gossiping?
It's harder to prove.
Wilda said, Ken, did you hear my question?
Right.
Wilda said, it's harder to prove.
What's the difference between gossip and reporting something that's in the newspaper and asking what the circumstances are behind it?
Well, sometimes there's gossip printed in the newspaper.
Can you arrest Colin?
You can. If you somehow gossip, it means you were a participant in it almost. Right?
Potentially. Were you going to add something?
You know, sometimes you wonder, you know, about gossip. I was talking to Paul the other day. We were talking about you.
Would you have been embarrassed if I walked in on you?
No, you can.
Oh, okay.
You can listen. I told him. I said, you know, we have a young preacher, and I says he is a little different than some of the older ones because he teaches. In other words, I said, I already told him that he ought to be a teacher to a college group, you know. So I told him, I said, he teaches where a lot of people are used to somebody coming in and giving them a sermon and so on. But I said, if you listen to him, you know, you can really, I told him about you talking about Ephesians and how it, to me, it come to light. He says, you know, that's just exactly what I need. I need somebody that, is, you know, teaches. And so, was I gossiping?
No.
I was talking about you, but I wouldn't, it
right.
was something I already told you.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it wasn't something, you know, it wasn't something negative.
Positive.
Yes, see, so, precisely, so the, and I didn't state that so clearly when I was giving those two criteria. I mean, it's possible that you'd be embarrassed if I was talking with Dale about you and you walked in, if we were talking about a surprise party, right? And I'd be, oh, whoops, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not just would I be embarrassed, but is it something negative that I would be embarrassed for you to hear? And so if I'm sharing something positive about someone else, certainly it isn't gossip.
Right. Well, anyhow, he told me, that's exactly what I need. Somebody that is, you know, a teacher. And so I was thinking about that because sometimes I talk about you in a like being a terrific teacher. In other words, where before things in the Bible, in other words, especially Ephesians.
Yeah.
To me, you have brought out Ephesians like nobody else has.
Well, I appreciate
it. Actually, Ephesians has come to life. It, I used to think Romans was one of my favorite, but I've learned more from the studies on Ephesians. And,
well, good. I hope everything will be your favorite.
Well, actually, the whole gospel is in Ephesians.
Yeah, it really
and,
is.
It is something that is to me, has really come to life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you praise someone behind their back, don't be afraid that you're gossiping about them.
Well, you know, I like I told him, he's not just an ordinary preacher. In other words, he teaches. He doesn't get up and preach. So I was warning him.
What to expect.
What to expect.
Yeah.
That's gossiping.
Well, why? What do you mean by that?
Well, you have negative and positive. Right?
Right, but is it gossip? But is it gossip if it's positive?
Did you look in the dictionary for what the word gossip means?
You know, I'm not and I'm not sure that I have looked in the dictionary under the word gossip. But I'm backing up from unwholesome talk. And if and whether or not the English definition of gossip fits exactly what I'm talking about here, we're using unwholesome talk behind someone's back. That's what we're talking about here.
Right.
And if gossip isn't technically the right word, we'll find another one. But that's the place we're coming from. Listen to this. Now, I've read this quote before. You may. Yes.
Back on question here.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, if somebody is thinking about committing suicide and they don't want you to tell anyone else, you tell someone else anyway, right? There are limits to all this stuff for health and safety. Yeah. Just an understanding that, you know, after a suicide attempt.
I understand that, but I just wanted to make sure
that we said it plainly. Yeah. After a suicide attempt, the vast majority of people who fail are glad they failed. In fact, no other treatment is necessary sometimes to prevent suicide than to lock a person away for 3 days. And the suicidal feelings will go away with no counseling and no medication and no treatment, and they come in waves. Right? So when somebody is on the verge of committing suicide, they forfeit their right to privacy, you know, in favor of preserving their life. For instance, right? So there are limits, and when we're talking about, you know, is it unwholesome talk? Are we saying something negative about the other? Are we criticizing them? Are we demeaning them in the presence of other people? That's quite a different thing to say so and so is in some serious trouble, and how can we save their life, than to be just spreading. Yeah, Chet, were you going to add some more clarification? Yes. And you're lying when you withhold information in other circumstances. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
But it's back to the words that build up.
Yes. Yes. And if I stand by and let somebody do some serious damage to themselves, did my words build up? Did my silence build up? Yeah. Listen to this quote. And I've read this before. It says, when a person comes to a minister or to anybody else in a position of trust, with complaints against a brother or a sister. Right, is this happening inside the church or outside the church? Right, inside the church. Let the minister or the person in a position of trust ask, have you complied with the rules our Savior has given? What rules is that referring to?
Well, don't do your brother.
Matthew 18. All right. So the person is coming now behind the other person's back. And the first question is, wait a minute, have you talked about this to their face yet? Right? And if he has failed to carry out any particular of this instruction, do not listen to a word of his complaint. In the name and spirit of Jesus, refuse to take up a report against your brother or sister in the faith. So they come up and hand you the rope. She says, as soon as you're clear that that's what's going on, you don't take the rope. Right? Refuse to take it. Listen to this. If members of the church go contrary to these rules, they make themselves subjects for church discipline and should be under the censure of the church. So my little rhetorical question, if a person can be disfellowshipped for profanity, why can't they be disfellowshipped for gossip? Actually was a trick question. Because the plain counsel we have here is they can and should be. And that if somebody is talking to you about somebody else and they have failed to deal directly with the person, they are saying, please censure me. Now, exactly what that looks like, I'm not sure. Right?
Crickets in the fuse.
Crickets in the fuse?
There would be anything but crickets.
Well, you know, censure simply means that you can't hold church office. Right? Now, around here, how many people do we have holding church offices? I don't know. But the crickets in the pews. The point being, if we cannot respect and love each other enough to follow these principles, why do we have a church? We're just playing a church. A friend of mine told me about the Amish back in, I don't know, probably Indiana. And they have a rule that if they go through, well, you know how in 1 Corinthians it says that, you know, you should examine yourself before you come together for the communion service and not be holding on to grudges and so on, and eating the body and drinking the blood in an unworthy manner. They basically say, well, if we can't be at peace with each other, right? If there's fights going on, if there's gossiping and backbiting going on, we won't have a communion service, right? They have them regularly scheduled. We're not gonna meet and play the game, you know, and smile at each other and while we're doing this, as though everything's fine. And if we miss three communion services because people can't resolve their differences, they just ban the whole church, just like that. Extreme? I don't know. But it recognizes that if we cannot show respect to each other when we are absent from each other, we're not a church. We're just playing a game, sitting in the pews together. And that's how they've chosen to acknowledge that fact. A friend of mine was pastoring. Well, he was actually one of my professors at seminary, was pastoring a church where, and this is kind of a side issue, but it gave me some insight, where there was a guy who, whenever he was gone, whenever the pastor was gone somewhere else, he would get up and take pot shots at him, the pastor, in front of church, you know, shoot down his programs, put down what he was preaching and, you know, different things like that, anytime the pastor wasn't around. And so at a board meeting or a business meeting, they brought together a resolution, you know, and voted on it, that they said, we think that unity in our church is so important that we're going to apply this quote, you know, that if a person's activities are divisive and they are, you know, working against the unity of the church, that we're going to put that person under censure. We're going to discipline them. And of course, if that fails to deal with the issue, the next step, someone would be disfellowshipped. So they voted this as a resolution in their church. This is our clear policy. Anyone who's behaving in a divisive manner will be disciplined. The next week, what do you think the guy did? No? That this same guy was back at it, right? The next time the pastor was gone, he was up there. And so at the next board meeting when they met, the pastor said, so, brother so-and-so, The report has reached me that, you know, this was not hidden. This was public. He was doing it in front of everybody, just not in front of the pastor. The report has reached me that some of your behavior in church this last week was viewed as divisive by some of the congregation. And so we're going to take a vote on censure. And the guy, oh, you can't do this. They took a secret ballot vote. And when all the votes came back to the pastor, he took them and folded them up and threw them in the trash. And he said, now we're not this time going to actually follow this all the way through. But he just let it go at that so the man would get the message that this was not something they were joking about. Well, the guy came up to him afterward. Well, the reason you didn't show anybody is because they didn't vote for censure. So they pulled him out of the trash and looked. It was unanimous. Now, again, that was an extreme case and situation. Of course, that guy cleaned up his act a little bit after that. But if we would take action, if a person were habitually speaking unwholesome words in the way of profanity or bad language, certainly it would be more than appropriate, and perhaps more appropriate, to hold each other accountable about the misuse of language that damages other people when they are not present. And this is also a trick question. But which kind of unwholesome talk is more dangerous? Profanity, cussing and swearing? Or gossip and talking behind other people's backs? The latter, gossip, is certainly more personally damaging. Both of them are the Ten Commandments, right? One says some things about God and about my respect for Him. Those are some pretty dangerous things. But in terms of doing damage to the body of Christ and hurting people, it sure seems to me that gossip is a whole lot more dangerous than when somebody flies off the handle and some words come out their mouth that they learned from their grandpa, you know, 30 years ago and have never quite gotten out of their system, if you follow what I'm saying. So, how do I deal with it? How do I respond when someone starts to hand me the rope? Well, Ellen White gives one set of words. You say, wait, have you complied with... Thank you. Have you complied with the rules our Savior has given? And if not, say, end of conversation. There are all kinds of ways that you could respond. You could say, hold it. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with so-and-so that we're talking about knowing we're having this conversation. I want to be respectful to them in their absence. Thanks for understanding. You know why we don't do these kinds of things? Why we don't stop the person who's gossiping to us? What's the main reason why that doesn't happen? Well, how many of you have been in that situation? Somebody starts blah, blah, and you... Why didn't you stop them? Okay, good. I found myself there and I didn't stop them and I didn't realize. Or even when I did realize that I should have stopped them, I didn't know how to stop them. And here I've listened to the whole thing and... What's so difficult about stopping them? Why do we fail to do that sometimes? Well, okay, sometimes we have an inflated sense of our own ability to solve the problem. Yes, okay. Any others?
I think you're afraid of creating a conflict.
Yes, I'm afraid to offend this person by saying, you're gossiping. Right? Or implying that in some way, that they're going to, get all in a snit. But what I want to know is, why am I not scared of offending the person who's being talked about? I'm only scared of the person who's gossiping and of offending them. Why shouldn't I be equally scared of offending the person who's being talked about? Well, in most cases, we're hoping they'll never find out. Right? And what they don't know won't hurt them, right? Only it does. Here's another problem. Why am I not afraid of offending God, who hears the whole conversation?
We're not too close to
it. Yeah. All I can think about is maybe possibly offending the person who's gossiping to me. Who are we fooling? You remember my brothers and the dirty jokes? I knew I wouldn't say them in front of my parents. It didn't occur to me that I wouldn't say it in front of God. Same story here. If I wouldn't say it in front of the other person, why would I say it in front of God? If it's somebody who's not part of the church, well, doing something like we just described might work. Whoa, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with so-and-so hearing this conversation. But often they'll get out the story before you even realize what's going on, right? And you don't have the same leverage, I suppose you could say, with somebody who's not part of this congregation, not a member of the church, makes no profession. Let me tell you the story of Susan and Anne and Marie. Susan came to Anne, a co-worker, and apologized to her for her part in an argument that had taken place in a meeting where all of them had been present. Right? So Susan apologized to Anne. So far, so good. But then she goes on to say how Marie, one of the other co-workers who was involved, will never listen. I'm so glad I can apologize to you, but I could never apologize to Marie because she never listens to me. By the way, when you say, I'm so sorry that so-and-so is such a jerk, is that an apology? No, that's not an apology. And it may not be that extreme, right? Here she's shared a sincere apology, I'm so sorry for my part in this, but has then jumped immediately onto, but so-and-so is so impossible to deal with. Well, it's come out in that much of a sentence. And Anne is left going, okay, I have a relationship with Susan, who's talking to me. I have a relationship with Marie. And Susan has just handed me a rope. How do I hand it back?
So if I call myself a jerk, that's not right
either. No, that doesn't help. How can Anne respond in such a way that deals effectively with Susan's burden, handing the rope back? This is confusing, isn't it? Right? This is not so simple. It's hard to figure out what to do that will be respectful to the person who's talking to you and show that you are going to be respectful to the person being talked about no matter what. Well, what are some possible things she could say? Let me run some by you and you can tell me how well they'd work. Thank you. I think I'm okay for a minute or two more. She could say, cut it out. I hate it when people gossip. How well would that work? Probably not. It might stop her.
Never gossip to you again.
Yeah. Well, that's part of my goal. But what else might come of that? She might never talk to me again, period. Yeah. All right. Susan could just not answer. How would that work? Alright. Alright. But what does it imply when you do not answer? What's likely to happen the next time that someone has gossip they want to share with you?
I think, why not?
Yep, why not? What if you just empathize? Oh, that's really difficult. You know, it must be really frustrating to not be able to talk with Marie. How well would that work? Yeah, you may not actually have agreed, but you've, in essence, said, my door's open. Next time you have something you want to complain about, I'll just empathize with you. So how can you both empathize, right, and say, I heard you and I respect you, and hand the rope back. How about this? She could say, wow, I sure appreciate you caring about our relationship enough to come and talk about me, all right, affirming the apology that came. I really like Marie myself, and I sure feel bad about the difficulty you're having there. What are you going to do? Now saying, what are you going to do? Hands the rope back. What are you going to do? It was your problem when you came in. You tried to hand it to me, and I'm handing it back to you. What are you going to do? It may not be perfect, but it does send the message that this is your burden. It also preempts them assuming that you agree with them, right? She said, I sure like Marie. When I was an assistant dean down in Australia, one of the first things the students did when I arrived was corner me. And after telling me all the awful things that they didn't like about the real, you know, the head dean, they asked me, what do you think of it? Now, what do you suppose they were trying to do?
Get him on their side.
Yeah, they were trying to divide and conquer. Get me on their side against the dean. And I didn't know the dean very well at that point. He was a farmer turned dean, right? Kind of a rough guy and you know, kind of rigid about how he ran the dorm and that kind of stuff. But I didn't know him very well. And I realized in this split second that I have to answer, how I answer this question may have a long-term effect on my success or lack of success here. And if I were honest, completely honest with them, yeah, there's some things that I don't necessarily like about the man. But I don't know him real well yet. Maybe those will go away. And there's some things that I do like and respect about him. But I realized if I let on that there's anything I don't like about him, they're going to use that to their advantage. And so I simply said, I like him. And I could see their faces fall. They just... Because as I found out later, they had been able to play the previous dean off of, assistant dean off of the dean. It was a free-for-all when he was on duty, and then when the dean came back on duty, it was clamped down on everything. And they just did this night after night after night. And they were hoping to perpetuate the same thing with me. And when I said, I like him, it closed the door to that. So when someone comes and gossips to you about someone else, when you send the message, well, I've always had a positive relationship with that person. I'm sorry you're having difficulty. What are you going to do? It closes the door to, you know, you're empathetic to them and their problem, but it closes the door to thinking you have sympathy with them and that you agree with them about the issue. Of course, if you've already listened to too much, maybe you've been involved in a triangle of gossip for some time, the easy way to make sure no one will gossip to you ever again is to short-circuit the triangle and tell the party who's been left out of the conversation everything that's been going on in the other conversation. Now, that's really scary to do. But if every time Dale gossips to me about Ken, I go tell Ken what he said, is Dale going to gossip to me anymore? Probably not. Probably not. Unless he hasn't heard. Well, I'm going to tell Dale. Dale, you're welcome to tell me anything you want about your bad feelings about Ken. But I'm going to pass it all on to Ken because I don't like to be holding your rope. Now, again, that's pretty extreme. You may be able to find a nicer way to do that. But if you've already been involved, you've got to do something like that to break out of it. Or you will keep being the dumping ground for all the bad things that they have to say about each other. All right, finally. Oh, well, there, the principle is if there's no secrets, there's no gossip. Right? Finally, the gospel of gossip. You know, the roots of gossip go all the way back to Satan's rebellion, don't they? That was all about Satan burdening and coloring the other inhabitants of heaven's view of God with his issues. Right? He had some difficulty with God, but he didn't deal directly with God about it. He went and spread his view of God around to everybody else and colored their trust of God with his mistrust of God. By the way, why didn't Satan deal directly with God about it? Well, the problem was with God, right? So there's no rope going on. If he dealt directly with God, he's going to the source. Why didn't he? Didn't have the courage to do it, I suppose, but why not? Yes! Now, if you read Ellen White's description of it in, I think it's Great Controversy, maybe in Spiritual Gifts, it seems that there's kind of two stages that happened there. That Satan was disturbed, and he went around and spread it around other people, and God confronted him. God went to him, right? Even though he never went to God. And God said, we need to straighten this out. And Satan was forgiven and restored, and he apologized. You're right, I'm wrong. And then he went and started it all over again. The next time around, Satan couldn't apologize because he knew already that he was wrong. And he didn't go back to God to figure it out because he knew he was wrong. He didn't want to solve the problem. He just wanted to spread his bad feelings around so there'd be more people on his side. When we gossip, we give the devil a foothold, as it says, because we're following the principles that he lives by. Right? That's why they're not appropriate for Christians. When we put our, but when we put ourselves on the line, when we take the initiative, when we risk being misunderstood, and we go to someone else in order to handle an issue in person, one-on-one, even at the risk of being misunderstood, hurt, getting crucified, we take on the character of Christ, who, even though it was at great risk to himself, came here when we had an issue with him. He took the initiative. We didn't go to him. He came to us at great risk of being misunderstood. And was he misunderstood? At great risk of being injured and hurt. And was he injured and hurt? But he was not willing to not come personally, individually, to deal with the issue. And when we follow that example, we partake of the Spirit of Christ. Good thing I didn't try to put more in. I don't know about you, but I still get caught all too often. You know, in my position, people often think, ah, he can help me, you know. I'm going to come to him and talk and get some help. But the fact is, if it's somebody else I know, please don't come and talk to me for help. Right? There are other people who could give you help if you need some help sorting something out. I should be called in when it's clear that the person's not listening to you, and you've already involved somebody else. Even though potentially I could give you a lot of help in the process, if you have to hand me a rope, I don't want it. But the exciting thing is, even if you don't do it perfectly, when you partake of the Spirit of Christ to go and talk with someone directly, it sends a lot of good messages to that person, even if they don't like what you come and say and point out. It says, I respect you and I love you and I think that you are going to be able to work this out with me. You're a worthwhile person and I wouldn't deal with this behind your back. And those are important and valuable messages to send.